The will of God is always for the present moment, the life of the body and of the soul, for both of them, no matter in what condition they are sustained by it alone. Bread is a poison without it. With it, poison is a safe medicine. Without it, books only confuse the mind, but with it, confusion becomes clarity. It is all that is good and true in everything and gives us God in all things. He is the all-perfect being, and when we possess him, we need nothing else. 6. The use of our reason and other faculties is profitable only when it serves as an instrument of God's activity. The mind and all its activities would like to hold first place among the tools used by God, but it must be relegated to the lowest, as if it were a dangerous slave, a slave from which a really good man could benefit greatly if he knew how to handle it, but one which could also harm him seriously if it were not kept under tight control. When we crave to be helped by conventional means, God tells us that his action is all we need. When, on the other hand, and without good reason, we wish to dispense with external help, God tells us that such help is an instrument which must be neither casually used nor rejected, but employed sincerely and naturally to serve his designs, used with total detachment, as if we had nothing, though we have everything. God's action is boundless in its scope and power, but it can only fill our souls if we empty them of all false confidence in our own ability. This false confidence can check the activity of God within us. God can, when he pleases, change all other obstacles into aids for spiritual progress. For to him everything is the same, equally useful or equally useless. Without him everything is nothing, and with him nothing is everything. We may meditate, indulge in contemplation, pray aloud, practice interior silence, live an active life or one withdrawn from the world, and though they may all be valuable, there is nothing better for us than to do what God wants at any particular moment. We must regard everything else with complete indifference and as something worth nothing at all. As we see only God in everything, we must take or leave all things according to his will, so that we neither live nor develop nor hope except as he ordains, and never try to use things which have neither power nor worth except through him. We must at all times and in all circumstances say with St. Paul, "Lord, what do you want me to do?" Acts 9, verse 6. We must not pick and choose. We must say, "I will do everything you wish. My mind wants to do one thing, my body another, but Lord, I want to do nothing but obey your holy will." Work or every kind of prayer, vocal or mental, active or passive, are all nothing unless your will gives them meaning. All my devotion is to your holy will, not for the things of this world, however grand and noble they are, for grace is given to us because of the love in our hearts, and not for any outstanding qualities of our minds. What makes us holy is the presence of God through the dwelling of the Blessed Trinity in the depths of our hearts when we give them up to God's will. Now, contemplation produces this close union of us with God, as indeed do other acts, provided, of course, that they are part of God's plan for us. Yet contemplation stands supreme, for it is the most effective means of achieving this union, if God wills it. So we are right to love contemplation and all other pious acts with the clear understanding that this love is really focused on the God of all goodness, who wants us to use every means that will unite us with him. If we entertain a prince, we naturally entertain him and his court. He would be insulted if we neglected his attendants with the excuse that we wanted to honor only him. 7. We cannot enjoy true peace unless we submit to God's will. If we do not concentrate entirely on doing the will of God, we shall find neither happiness nor holiness, no matter what pious practices we adopt, however excellent they may be. If you are not satisfied with what God chooses for you, what else can please you? Does the food prepared for you by God himself disgust you? Well, can you say what other food would not seem stale to someone with so perverted a taste? We must realize that we cannot be really fed, strengthened, purified, enriched, and made holy unless we fulfill the duties of the present moment. What else do you want? Why look elsewhere? Are you wiser than God? Why do you seek anything different from what He desires? Do you imagine, considering His wisdom and goodness, that He can be wrong? When you come across something ordained by this wisdom and goodness, you must surely be convinced of its excellence. Do you for one moment imagine you will find peace by resisting the Almighty? It is rather this resistance which we often keep up without realizing it, that is the source of all our trouble. It is only right that if we are discontented with what God offers us every moment, we should be punished by finding nothing else that will content us. If books, the example of the saints, and discussions about spiritual matters do nothing but disturb our peace of mind, and if we feel satiated but unsatisfied by them, it is a sure sign that we have not truly abandoned ourselves to God's will, that we are occupying ourselves with these things out of self-love. They prevent God's entry into our souls, and so we must get rid of these obstacles. Provided, though, that God desires us to have them, we must accept them, like everything else, as part of God's plan for us. We take them, use them, abandon them as soon as their purpose is over, and attend to the work of the present moment. In reality, nothing benefits us that does not arise from God's will, and there is absolutely nothing that gives us more peace or does more to make us holy than obeying the will of God. 8. There is only one way to judge how holy we are, how closely we obey the will of God. This will clothes all things with a supernatural, a celestial significance. His will is supreme. Everything it touches glows with a divine radiance. In order to keep on the straight road leading to perfection, we must make quite sure that all spiritual promptings we receive are from God. We shall know they are not divinely inspired if they withdraw us from the duties of our state of life. For these duties are the clearest indication of God's will, and nothing should supersede them. There is nothing we need fear in them, nothing we should ignore, nothing we have to choose. They present no problem. All the time we spend in fulfilling these duties is most precious and profitable for us, as we can be sure that we are obeying God's holy will. Holiness consists in following the designs of God, and so we must reject nothing, seek nothing, accept all that comes from Him, and nothing else. Books, the advice of the learned, vocal and interior prayer, will all instruct and guide us toward unity with Him, provided He has willed us them. Quietism is quite wrong when it condemns these means and the use of our senses, for God desires that some people should travel along this road. This is obvious from their way of life and from their spiritual indications. It is a waste of time to try to picture any kind of self-abandonment which excludes all personal activity and seeks only quiescence. For if God wishes us to act for ourselves, then action makes us holy. For some, God wills only that they should attend to the duties of their everyday life and to what other matters He confronts them with. They need do nothing else to achieve perfection. For others, God may demand the accomplishment of things which go beyond their ordinary duties. Those upon whom He makes this demand will recognize it because they will be attracted by it and will, as it were, feel inspired. If we are one of these, the best thing we can do is to go where inspiration leads us, without ever neglecting to do what we are commanded to do, and obeying always those commands which God may unexpectedly give us. Saints are made by God just as He wishes. They are made according to His plan, and every one of them falls in with this plan. This submission is real self-abandonment, and nothing could be better. All saints must fulfill the duties imposed on them by their state of life and by God. They live hidden and obscure lives, and avoid the dangers of this evil world. They are not saints because of this, but solely because of their submission to the will of God. The more complete their submission, the greater their holiness. Yet we must not make the mistake of thinking that those holy men and women whose virtues shine out because of their wonderful and unusual activities are thereby less completely abandoned to God's designs. If they were content only to practice their ordinary duties once God had demanded these extraordinary activities from them, they would be setting themselves against Him by disobeying His will, and no longer would every moment be passed in His service. They have to exert themselves, stretch themselves to their full capacity to meet the demands of God. The inspirations which come to them through grace must be followed. There are, of course, people whose duties are set out for them by the ordinary Christian laws, and they must be limited by these laws, for that is the restriction God imposes upon them. But it must always be remembered that there are others, though they are bound by these laws, who must also obey that other law, that law working on their inmost being which is imprinted on their hearts by the Holy Spirit. Who among us is the holiest? To try to find out is pointless. Every one must follow the appointed path. Holiness consists in obeying God and working with Him to the best of our abilities. Making comparisons between various states is meaningless, for holiness is not to be looked for in the number or kind of duties given us. If we act out of self-love, or if we do not stamp it out as soon as we are aware of it, we shall stay poor in the midst of a plenty that is not part of God's design. Still, I would like to give some kind of answer to the question, and what I think is this. Our holiness is measured by our love of God, and it increases in proportion to the growth of our desire to obey His will and His plans for us, no matter what they are. We can see this in Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. There was more love than grandeur in their personal lives, more spirituality than formality. There is nothing to tell us that they sought holiness in things and events, but only in the way they dealt with them. So we must recognize that there is no special or singular road leading to perfection, but that for most people easily the best thing is submission to all that God wills for their particular way of life. 9. To become holy is very easy when this doctrine is properly understood. I believe that people trying to be holy would be saved a lot of trouble if they were taught to follow the right path, and I am writing of people who lived ordinary lives in the world and of those specially marked by God. Let the former realize what lies hidden in every moment of the day and the duties each one brings, and let the latter appreciate the fact that things they regard as trivial and of no importance are essential to sanctity. And let them both be aware that holiness means the eager acceptance of every trial sent them by God. This is vastly superior to the enjoyment of all extraordinary experiences. It is the philosopher's stone which changes into gold all their worries, all their troubles, all their sufferings. Let them realize this, and then how happy they will be. Let them realize that all they have to do to achieve the height of holiness is to do only what they are already doing, and endure what they are already enduring, and to realize, too, that all they count as trivial and worthless is what can make them holy. How I would like to preach the virtues of your holy will and teach everyone that nothing is easier, more ordinary, and more within reach than holiness. The good and the bad thieves had nothing different to do and suffer to become saints. So let us take two ordinary people. One is wholly worldly, the other spiritual. Yet the demands made upon them are equal. Yet the one achieves eternal happiness because he submits gladly to your holy will, but the other damns himself because, given the same tasks, he undertakes them with a sullen reluctance. Their hearts are very different. Now, you who read this, and you are very dear to me, must realize that I am asking nothing extraordinary from you. All I want is for you to carry on as you are doing and endure what you have to do, but change your attitude to all these things. And this change is simply to say, I will, to all that God asks. What is easier? For who could refuse obedience to a will so kind and so good? By this obedience we shall become one with God. Chapter 2. Embrace the present moment as an ever-flowing source of holiness. 1. The activity of God is everywhere and always present, but it is visible only to the eye of faith. All creatures live in the hands of God. By our senses we can see only the action of the creature, but faith sees the Creator acting in all things. Faith sees that Jesus Christ lives in everything and works through all history to the end of time, that every fraction of a second, every atom of matter contains a fragment of His hidden life and His secret activity. The actions of created beings are veils which hide the profound mysteries of the workings of God. After the resurrection, Jesus Christ took the disciples unawares by His appearances, showing Himself to them as if disguised, and then appearing when He had revealed Himself. And it is this same Jesus, ever living and ever active, who still surprises us if our faith is not strong and clear-sighted enough. There is never a moment when God does not come forward in the guise of some suffering or some duty, and all that takes place within us, around us, and through us, both includes and hides His activity. Yet because it is invisible, we are always taken by surprise and do not recognize His operation until it has passed by us. If we could lift the veil, and if we watched with vigilant attention, God would endlessly reveal Himself to us, and we should see and rejoice in His active presence in all that befalls us. At every event, we should exclaim, "It is the Lord," John 21, verse 7. Nothing could happen to us without our accepting it as a gift from God.